A Wonderful Wizard of Oz by L. Frank Baum. Chapter 11. The Wonderful City of Oz. Even the eyes protected by the green spectacles, Dorothy and her friends were just dazzled by the brilliancy. The wonderful city. The streets are lined with beautiful houses, all built of green marble and studded everywhere with sparkling emeralds. They walked over to a pavement, the same green marble. Marble where the blocks are joined together, the rows of emeralds set closely and glittering in the brightness of the sun. The window panes were of green glass. Even the sky above the city had its green tint, and the rays of the sun were green. There were many people, men, women and children, walking about. These were all dressed in green clothes and greenish skins. They all looked at Dorothy and her strangely assorted company. Wondering eyes, the children all ran away, hid behind their mothers when they saw the lion, but no one spoke to them. Many shops stood in the street, and Dorothy saw that everything in them was green. Green candy, green popcorn, offered for sale, wears green shoes, green hats, and green clothes of all sorts. In one place, a man was selling green lemonade. When all the children bought it, Dorothy could see they paid for it in green, with green pennies. There seemed to be no horse nor animals of any kind. Men carried things around in little green carts, which they pushed before them. Everybody seemed happy, contented, prosperous. Golden gates led them through the streets till they came to a big building, exactly in the middle of the city, which was the Palace of Oz, a great wizard. There was a soldier before the door, dressed in green uniform and wearing a long green beard. "Here you are. Here are strangers," said the guardian of the gates, looked to him. "They demand to see the great Oz." "There is I," answered the soldier. "I'll carry your message to him." So they passed through the palace gates and were led into a big room with clean carpet and lovely green furniture set with emeralds. Soldier made them all wipe their feet upon a green mat before entering the room. When they were seated, he said politely, "Please make yourselves comfortable. I go to the door to the throne room. Tell Oz you are here." They had to wait for a long time before the soldier returned. When at last he came back, Dorothy asked, "Have you seen Oz?" "No, no," returned the soldier. "I've never seen him. I spoke to him as he sat behind his screen, gave him your message. He said he would grant you an audience if you so desire, but each one of you must enter his presence alone. He admits but one each day. Therefore, as you must remain in the place for several days. I'll have you shown to rooms where you may rest in comfort whilst your journey." "Thank you," replied the girl. "That is very kind of Oz." The soldier now blew a green whistle, and once a young girl, dressed in pretty green silk gown, entered the room. She had lovely green hair and green eyes. She bowed low before Dorothy, as she said, "Follow me, I will show you your room." So Dorothy said goodbye to all her friends except Toto, taking the dog in her arms, followed the green girl through the several passages and up three flights of stairs. There came to a room in front of hers, the sweetest room in the world, with a soft comfortable bed that had sheets of green silk and green velvet counterpane. There was a grotesque fountain in the middle of the room, a good shot of spray, green perfume in the air, fall back into beautiful carved green marble basin. Beautiful green flowers stood in the windows. There was a shelf with a row of little green books. When Dorothy had time to open these books, she found them all full of queer green pictures and made her laugh. They were so funny. The wardrobe was many green dresses, made of silk and satin and velvet. All of them fitted Dorothy exactly. "Make yourself at home," said the old green girl. "If you wish for anything, ring the bell. I'll just send for you tomorrow morning." So she left Dorothy alone and went back to the others. These she also led to rooms. Each one of them found himself lodged in a very pleasant part of the palace. Of course, his politeness was wasted on the scarecrow, for when he found himself alone in the room, he stood stupidly on one spot, just within the doorway, to wait till morning. If it could not rest him to lie down, he could not close his eyes, remained all night staring at a little spider, which was weaving its web in the corner of the room. just as if it was not one of the most wonderful new rooms in the world. Tin Woodman lay down his bed from force of habit, for he remembered when he was made of flesh. But not being able to sleep, he passed the night moving his joints up and down, make sure they kept his world working order. Lying would have preferred a bed of dry leaves in the forest. Did not like being shut up in the room. He had too much sense to let this worry him. He sprang up on the bed, rolled himself up like a cat, and purred himself asleep in a minute. The next morning after breakfast, the green maiden came to fetch Dorothy. She dressed in her in the prettiest gowns, made a green bow of caddis satin. Dorothy put on a green silk apron and tied a green bow ribbon round Toto's neck. They started for the trophy room in the Great Oz. First they came to Great Hall, in which were many ladies and gentlemen of court, all dressed in rich costumes. The people had nothing to do but talk to each other. They always came to wait until outside the throne room. Every morning, no, they were never prevented to see Oz. Dorothy entered, they looked at her curiously. One of them whispered, "Are you, golly, you really going to look upon the face of Oz the Terrible?" "Of course," answered the girl, "if you see me." "Oh, he will see you," said the soldier, who had taken a message to the wizard. "Though he does not like to have people ask to see him. Indeed, at first he was angry, and so I should send you back where you came from. When he asked me what you looked like, when I mentioned your silver shoes, he was very much interested. At last, I told him, about a mark upon your forehead. He told me he would admit you to his presence. Just then a bell rang, and the green girl said to Dorothy, "That is a signal. You must go into the throne room alone." She opened the door, and Dorothy walked boldly through and found herself in a wonderful place. It was a big round room with a high arched roof, and walls and ceiling and rope floor. It covered with large emeralds set closely together. In the centre of the roof was a light as bright as the sun, which made the emeralds sparkle in a wonderful manner. But what interested Dorothy most was the big throne of green marble that stood in the middle of the room, shaped like a chair with sparkled gems, as did everything else. In the centre of the chair was an enormous head without a body to support it, or any arms or legs whatsoever. There was no hair upon his head, but he had eyes and nose and mouth. It was much bigger than the head of the biggest giant. Dorothy gazed upon it this in wonder and fear, her eyes turned slowly, looked at her sharply and steadily. Then a mouth moved, and Dorothy heard a voice say, "I am Oz, the great and terrible. Who are you, and why do you seek me?" Not much such an awful voice as she expected to come from the big head, so she took courage and answered, "I am Dorothy, small and meek. I've come to you for help." The eyes looked at her thoughtfully for a full minute. Then the voice said, "Where did you get those silver shoes?" "I got them from the Wicked Witch of the East, when my house fell upon her and killed her," he replied. "Where did you get the mark upon your forehead?" continued the voice. "That is where the Good Witch of the North kissed me. Then she bade me goodbye and sent me to you," said the girl. Again the eyes looked at her sharply, and they saw she was telling the truth. And Oz asked, "What do you wish me to do?" "Send me back to Kansas, where my Aunt Em and Uncle Henry are," she answered furiously. "Don't like your country, though it is so beautiful. I'm sure Aunt Em will be dreadfully worried over my being away so long." The eyes winked 3 times. Then they turned up to the ceiling, down the floor, and rolled round so quickly. They seemed to see every part of the room. At last they looked at Dorothy again. "Why should I do this for you, Oz? Because you're strong and I am weak. Because you're a great wizard and I'm only a little girl. You are strong enough to kill the Wicked Witch of the East," said Oz. "That just happened," returned Dorothy. "Simply, I could not help it." "Well," said the head, "I will not give you my answer. You have no right to expect me to send you back to Kansas unless you do something for me in return. Country, everything must pay for. Everyone must pay for everything he gets. If you wish me to use my magic power, send you home again, you must do something for me first. Help me and I'll help you." "What must I do?" asked the girl. "Kill the Wicked Witch of the West," answered the girls. "But I cannot," exclaimed Dorothy, clearly surprised. "You killed the Witch of the West, East. and you wear the silver shoes, you bear a powerful charm. Is it not now but one wicked witch left in all this land? When you tell me that she's dead, I'll send you back to Kansas, but not before. The girl began to weep. She was so much disappointed that her eyes winked again and looked upon her anxiously, as if the girl Oz felt she could help him, if she would. I never killed anything willingly, she stopped. Even if I wanted to, how could I kill the wicked witch? If you, who are you, great and terrible, cannot kill her yourself, how do you expect me to do it? I do not know, said Ed. That is my answer, and my, until the witch dies, you will not see your uncle and aunt again. Remember that the witch is wicked, tremendously wicked, all to be killed. Now go and do not ask me again until you've done your task. Sorrowfully, Dorothy left the throne room and went back with Lion and Scarecrow. Tin Woodman waited to hear what Oz had said to her. There is no hope for me, she said sadly, but Oz will not send me home till I have killed the wicked witch of the West. That I could never do. Friends were sorry, but I could do nothing to help her. The Dorothy went to her own room, lay down the bed and cried herself to sleep. Next morning, the soldier with the green whiskers came to Scarecrow and said, come with me, for Oz has sent for you. So Scarecrow followed him, admitted into the green throne room, where he saw sitting on an emerald throne, and the most lovely lady, dressed in green silk blaze, and wore upon her flowing green locks a crown of jewels, glowing from her shoulders, with wings gorgeous in colour, so like they were fluttered, if the slightest breath of air reached them. Scarecrow bowed, as prettily as his squirrel stuffing would let him, for this beautiful creature. He looked upon her. She looked upon him sweetly and said, I am Oz, the great and terrible. Who are you? Why do you seek me? As Scarecrow had expected to see the great head Dorothy had told him of, was most astonished, but he answered her bravely. I am only a scarecrow stuffed with straw. Therefore I have no brain. I come to you praying that you have not put brains in my head instead of straw, so I will come as much a man as any other in your dominations. Why should I do this for you? Asked the lady. Because you're wise and powerful, and no one else can help me, answered Scarecrow. I never grant favours without some return, said Oz. But it is much I promise. If you kill for me the wicked witch of the West, I bestow upon you great many brains, and such good brains that you be the wisest man in all the land of Oz. I thought you asked Dorothy to kill the witch, said the Scarecrow, in surprise. So I did. I don't care who kills her. But until she's dead, I will not grant your wish. Now go, and do not seek me again till you earn the brains you so greatly deserve. Scarecrow went softly back to his friends and told them that what Oz had said, and Dorothy surprised to find the great wizard was not ahead, as she had seen him, but a lovely lady. All the same, said Scarecrow, he needs a heart as much as a tin woodman. The next morning, a soldier with the green whiskers came to the tin woodman and said, Oz has sent for you, follow me. So the tin woodman followed him and came into the great throne room. He didn't know whether he would find Oz, lovely lady, or hid. He hoped it would be the lovely lady. Poor, he said to himself, if it is a head, I'm sure I shall not be given a heart, since a head has no heart of his own, and therefore cannot feel for me. But if it's a lovely lady, I shall beg the heart from her heart, for all the ladies herself said to be kindly hearted. When the woodsman entered the great throne room, he saw neither the head or lady or Oz take the shape of a most terrible beast, and nearly as big as an elephant. A green throne seemed hardly strong enough to hold its weight. Beast had a head like a rhinoceros. Only there were five eyes in its place, face. With five long arms growing out of its body, also five long slim legs, thick woolly hair covered every part of it. A more dreadful looking monster could not be imagined. It was fortunate the Tin Woodman had no heart for that moment, for he would have been best loud and fast, would have beat fast and loud and fast for terror. But being only tin, the woodsman was not at all afraid, although he was much disappointed. I am Oz, The great and terrible, spoke the beast in a voice that was one great roar. Who are you and why do you seek me? I am the woodsman. I made of tin. If I have no heart, I cannot love. I pray you to you, give me a heart, and I may be as other men are. Why should I do this? Demanded the beast. Because I asked it. And you alone can grant my request, answered the woodsman. I was gave you a low growl like this, and said gruffly, if you indeed desire a heart, you must earn it. How, said the woodsman, help Dorothy to kill the wicked witch of the west, replied the beast. When the witch is dead, come to me and I will give you the biggest and kindest, most loving heart in the land of Oz. So the tinsman was forced to return sorrowfully to his friends and tell them the terrible beast he'd seen. They all wondered greatly the many forms the great wizard would take over him upon himself. Lion said, if it be, he's a beast, and I'll go to see him. I shall roll all my letters. So in front of him, you've got me all I was. If he's lovely lady, I shall pretend to spring upon her, to compel her to my bidding. If he's a great head, he'll be in my mercy. I shall roll his head all about the room. He promises to give us all that we desire. So be good cheer, my friends, for we will not yet be well. Next morning, the soldier with the green whiskers led him to the lion, the great throne room, and bade him enter the presence of Oz. Lion at once passed through the door, glanced around, saw his surprise, for the throne was a ball of fire, so fierce and glowing, could scarcely bear to graze upon it. His first thought was that Oz had by accident caught on fire, burning up, but what he tried to get nearer, heat was so tensive, it singed his whiskers, he crept back trembling. A spot near the door, a low, quiet voice came to the bull fire. These are words it spoke. I am Oz the great and terrible. Who are you and why do you seek me? A lion answered, I am a lion, afraid of his being. I come to you to beg what? That you give me courage. Then in reality you may become king beast. And man, call me. Why shall I give you courage, demanded Oz? Because all the wizards, the greatest and well known had power to grant my request, answered the lion. But the fire burned fiercely for a time. A voice said, bring me proof the wicked witch is dead, and the moment I will give you the courage. As long as the wicked witch lives, you must remain a coward. The lion was angry at the speech. He could not say nothing, replying. A voice said something grazing at the bowl of fire. It came so furiously hot, he turned all tail and rushed from the room. He is greatly glad to find his friend waiting for him. I told him them the terrible interview with the wizard. What shall we do? Said Dorothy sadly. There is only one thing we can do, returned the lion. That is to go to the land of Winkies, take out the wicked witch and destroy her. But suppose we cannot, said the girl. I shall never have courage, declared the lion. I shall never have brains, said the scarecrow. I shall never have a heart, spoke the tin woodman. I should never see Aunt Em and Uncle Henry, said Dorothy, crying and crying. Be careful, cried the green girl. The tears will fall on your green silk gown and spot it. But Dorothy dried her eyes and said, I suppose we must try it. I'm sure I do not want to kill anybody, even to use Aunt Em, see Aunt Em again. I'll do it go with you. I know I am too much of a coward. Kill the lion, said the lion. I'll go too, declared the scarecrow, but I shall not be much help to you. I'm such a fool, having the heart to harm even a witch, remarked the tinsman. But if you go, I certainly should go with you. Therefore, he decided to start upon their journey. Next morning, the woodsman shoved his axe, a green grindstone, and all his joints probably oiled. The scarecrow stuffed himself a fresh jaw, Dorothy put new paint on his eyes. He might see better. The girl was very kind to them, filled Dorothy's basket with good things to eat, fastened a little bell around Toto's neck for green robin. They went to bed quite early and slept soundly till daylight. When they were awakened by the crowing of a green cock and lived in the back garden of the palace, a crackling of a hen had laid and the green egg. Chapter 12. The Search of the Wicked Witch. The soldier with the green whiskers led them through the streets of Emerald City They reached the room where the guardian of guards lived. This officer unlocked their spectacles, put them back in his great box, and he politely opened the door gate for their friends. Which the road leads to the Wicked Witch of the West? Asked Dorothy. There is no road, answered the guardian of gates. No one ever wishes to go that way. How then are we to find her? Replied the girl. That'll be easy, replied the man. But when she knows your country, you are the country of the Winkies, she will find you, make you all her slaves. Perhaps not, said Skogrum. What do you mean, destroyer? Oh, that's different, said the guardian of gates. No one ever destroyed her before, so I naturally thought she'd make slaves of you, as she had of the rest. But take care, for she's wicked and fierce, may not allow you to destroy her. Keep to the west. The sun sets, and you cannot fail to find her. He thanked him and bade him goodbye, and turned towards the west, walking over fields of soft grass, dotted here and there with daisies and buttercups. Dorothy still wore the pretty silk dress she had put on in the palace, and now, to her surprise, she found it was no longer green, but pure white. The ribbon round Bertha's neck had also lost its green colour, was of white to Dorothy's dress. Emma City was soon left behind. He advanced the ground, became rougher, halier. There's no farms nor houses, this country of the west. The ground was untilled. In the afternoon, the sun rose hot in their faces, but there was no trees to offer them shade. So before night, Dorothy, Toto, and the lion were tired, lay down upon the grass and fell asleep, the woodman and the scarecrow keeping watch. Now the Wicked Witch of the West had but one eye. It was powerful, a telescope, to see everywhere. As she sat in the door of the castle, she happened to look around and saw Dorothy lying asleep with her friends all about her. They were a long distance off. The Wicked Witch was angry to find them in her country. They blew upon a silver whistle and hung around her neck, and once they came running to her from all directions, a pack of green wolves. They had long legs and fierce, sharp teeth. Go get these people, said the witch, and tear them to pieces. Are you going to make them your slaves? Asked the leader of the wolves. No, she answered. One is tin and one of straw. One is a girl, another a lion. None of them were fit to work, so you may tear them into small pieces. Very well, said the wolf, dashed away at full speed, followed by the others. It was lucky that Scarecrow and Woodman were wide awake and heard the wolves coming. This is my fight, said Woodman, so get behind me. I will beat them as they come. He had seized his axe, with which he made very sharp. The leader wolves came on. The tinman Woodman swung his arm and chopped the wolf's head from his body so that he immediately died. As soon as he could raise his axe, another wolf came up. He also fell under the sharp edge of Tin Woodman's weapon. There were 40 wolves, and 40 times Wolf was killed, and so at last they all lay dead, heaped before the woodman. Then he put down his axe and sat beside the crow, said, it was a good fight, friend. He waited until Dorothy woke the next morning. The little girl was quite frightened. We saw the great pile of shaggy wolves. But Tin Woodman told her all. She thanked him for saving them, sat down to breakfast, after which they started again upon their journey. And the same morning, the Wicked Witch came to the door. Castle looked out of one eye and could see far off. He saw that all wolves lying dead, strangers still travelling through the country. This made her angrier than before. She blew her silver whistle twice. Straight away a great flock of wild crows came flying towards her, enough to darken the sky. The Wicked Witch, said the King Crow, fly at once to the strangers, pick out their eyes and tear them to pieces. Wild crows flew in one great flock toward Dorothy's companions. When the little girl saw them coming, she was afraid. But Scarecrow said, this is my battle, so lie down beside me, and you will not be harmed. So they all lay upon the ground and set the Scarecrow. He stood up and stretched out his arms. Crows saw him. They were frightened. These birds always are the Scarecrow, so did not dare to come any nearer. But the Queen Crow said, it's only a stuffed man. I'll peck his eyes out. King Crow flew to Scarecrow. Scarecrow, who caught it by the head and twisted his neck, who died. Then another crow flew at him. and the Scarecrow twisted its neck again, so. There were 40 scarecrows, 40 times the Scarecrow twisted the neck, to at last all were lying dead beside him. They called to his companion to rise, again they went upon their journey. Then the Wicked Witch looked out again, and saw her crows lying in a heap. She got in a terrible rage, blew 3 times upon a silver whistle. Forthwith they heard a great buzzing in the air. A swarm of black bees came flying towards her. "Go to the strangers, sting them to death," cried the witch. The bees turned. They flew rapidly till they came to where Dorothy and her friends were walking. The woodsman had seen them coming, and the Scarecrow studied what to do. "Take up my straw and scatter it over the little girl and a dog and lion," said the woodsman. "The bees cannot sting them." "Yes," the woodman did. And so Dorothy lay close beside the lion, held her to her arms, straw covered him entirely. Bees came and found no one, the woodsman to sting. So they flew at him and broke off their stings against the tin, without hurting the woodsman at all. As the bees could not live, their stings were broken. There was an end of the black bees. They lay scattered thick about the woodsman, like little heaps of fine coal. Before everything alone and got up, the girl helped the tin woodman, put the straw back into the scarecrow again, so it was as good as ever, and they started upon their journey once more. The Wicked Witch was so angry she saw black bees in the heaps like fine coal. She stamped her feet and tore her hair and gnashed her teeth. Then she called a dozen of her slaves, called the Winkies, and gave them sharp spears, telling them to go and strangers destroy them. Winkies were not a brave people, but they had to do what they were told. They marched away and came near to Dorothy. Their lion gave a great roar and sprang towards them. Poor Winkies were so frightened, they ran back as fast as they could. When they returned across, the Wicked Witch beat them well with a strap and sent them back to their work, after which she sat down to think what she could do next. She could not understand how all plans destroyed strangers failed, as she was a powerful witch as well as a wicked one. She soon made up her mind how to act. There was in her cupboard a golden cap with circled diamonds and rubies running around it. Its golden hat with a charm. Ever crown owned it could call 3 times upon the winged monkeys, could obey any order they were given, but no person could command these strange creatures 1 or 3 times. Twice already the Wicked Witch used the charm of the cap. Once was when she made the Winkies her slaves, set herself to rule over their country. Wicked winged monkeys helped her do this. Second time was when she fought against the great Oz himself, driven him out of the land of the West. Wicked winged monkeys also helped her in doing this. Only once more could she use this gold cap, for which reasons she did not like to do so. So until all her other powers exhausted, but now that her fierce wolves and her wild crows and stinging bees were gone, the slaves had been scared away by cattle lions. She saw there's only one way to left destroy Dorothy, the friends. So the Wicked Witch took the golden cap from her cupboard and placed it upon her head. Then she stood upon her left foot and said slowly, "Eep, beep, eep, eep, kala, kiki, kali." As she stood upon her right foot and said, "Hilio, hilio, hilio, hilio." After she stood upon both feet, cried in a loud voice, "Zis say, zos say, zik." Now that the charm began to work, the sky was darkened. Low rumbling sound was heard in the air, a rushing many wings, a great chattering and laughing. The sun came out as a dark sky to show the Wicked Witch surrounded by a cloud of monkeys, each with a pair of immense and powerful wings on his shoulders. One much bigger than the other seemed to be their leader. He flew close to the witch and said, "You have called us for the third and last time. What do you command?" "Go to the strangers who are in my land and destroy them." "Oh, except the lion," said the Wicked Witch. "Bring the beast to me, for I have a mind to harness him. I will also make him work." "Your commands shall be obeyed," said the leader. Then with a great deal of chattering of noise, the wicked monkeys flew away to place where Dorothy and her friends were walking. Some monkeys seized the Tin Woodman, carried him through the air, till they were over a country thickly covered with rocks, where he dropped the poor Tin Woodman fell a great distance on the rock to the rocks. An ace of battered vented, could neither move nor groan. Hours the monkeys caught the scarecrow. Their long fingers pulled all the straw out of his clothes and head, and made his hat and boots, and closed a small bundle, threw it into the top branch of a tall tree. Main monkey threw pieces of stout rope and a line and wound round many coils around his body, head and legs, until he was able to bite or scratch or struggle anyway, and lifted him up, flew away with him on the witch's, to the witch's castle, where he had placed in a small yard with a high iron fence around it, so they could not escape. But Dorothy, they did not harm at all. She stood with Toto in her arms, watching the sad fate of her comrades, thinking it would soon be her turn. The winged monkeys flew by up to her. His long, hairy arms stretched out, his ugly face grinning terribly. He saw the mark of Good Witch's kiss on her forehead and stopped short, motioning the others not to touch her. "We dare not touch this little girl," he said to them, "for she is protected by the power of the good and is greater than the power of evil. All we can do is carry her to the castle of the Wicked Witch and leave her there." They carefully, gently, they picked up Dorothy, their arms, and carried her swiftly through the air. They came to the castle, where they set her down upon the front doorstep. Then the witch leader said to the witch, "We have obeyed you as far as we are able. It is a woman and scarecrow destroyed, and a lion is tied in your yard. No girl we dare not harm, nor the dog, for she carries in her arms. Your power over our band now ended, and you will never see us again." And all the winged monkeys, with much laughing and chattering, a noise flew into the air, but soon out of sight. Wigwitch was both surprised and worried when he saw the mark on Dorothy's forehead, for he knew well that neither the winged monkeys nor herself dare hurt the girl. Anyway, she looked down at Dorothy's feet and, seeing the silver shoes, began to tremble with fear, for he knew what a powerful charm belonged to them. At first, the witch was tempted to run away from Dorothy, but she happened to look into Charles' eye. Charles' eye and saw how simple soul behind them was, and that little girl did not know the wonderful power of shoes gave her. So the Wicked Witch laughed herself and thought, "I can call you, she'll make her my slave, for she does not know how to use her power." Then she said to Dorothy, harshly, severely, "Come with me and see your mind. Everything I tell you, for if you do not, I will make an end of you." I did of the Tin Woodman and the Scarecrow. Dorothy followed her through many of the beautiful rooms, because until they came to the kitchen, which bade her clean, and pots and kettles wet to the floor, keep the fire fed. Bade her clean the pots and kettles, and sweep the floor, keep the fire blade fed for wood. Dorothy went to work meekly, her mind made up to work as hard as she could. He was glad the Wicked Witch had decided not to kill her. Driving hard at work, the witch thought she would go into the courtyard, harness a lion, like a horse. It would amuse her, she was sure, to make him draw a chariot whenever she wished to go to drive. He opened the gate, the lion gave him a wild roar, bound up to a sufficiency. Witch was afraid and ran out the gate again. "If I cannot harness you," said the witch to the lion, begging for the gates. For the bars of the gate, "I shall starve you. You shall have nothing to eat till you do as I wish." Soon after that, he took no food to the prison lion. But every day he came to the gate at noon and asked, "Are you ready to be harnessed like a horse?" Lion would answer, "No, I come into the yard. You shall not bite you." But the lion did not have to do as the witch wished. But every night while the woman was asleep, Dorothy carried him food from the cupboard. After he'd eaten, he would lie down to his bed of straw. Dorothy would lie beside him and put her head on the soft, shaggy mane. But he talked of the troubles and tried planning of some way to escape. But they could find no way to get out of the castle, for it was constantly guarded by little yellow winkies, with a slave, the Wicked Witch, and not afraid of her not to do as she told them. The girl had worked hard during the day, and after which threatened to beat her, the same old umbrella he always carried on her hand. In truth, she did not dare to strike Dorothy, because of the mark on her forehead. The child did not notice. There was fear herself and Toto. Once the witch struck Toto a blow, umbrella, a brazen dog flew in her, bit her leg in turn, which did not bleed where she was bitten, but she was so wicked, the blood in her dried some up many years before. Dorothy's life became very sad, grew to understand, be harder than ever to get back to Kansas and Aunt Em. Again, sometimes, she cried bitterly for hours, Toto sitting at her feet, looking into her face, whining dismally, to show how sorry he was for his little mistress. Toto did not really care whether he was in Kansas or Land of Oz, but little Dorothy was with him. But he knew the little girl was unhappy, made him unhappy too. And the witch had brought a great longing to have her own of silver shoes, the girl always wore. Her bees and crows and wolves were lying in heaps and drying up, as she was used on power to grow the gap. But if she could only get hold of silver shoes, it might give her more power than all the other things she had lost. He watched Dorothy carefully to see if she ever took off the shoes, thinking she might steal them. The child was so proud of her pretty shoes. She never took them off except at night when she took her bath, which was too much afraid of dark to dare go into Dorothy's room at night to take the shoes, as she had dread of the water, greater than a fear of the dark. She never came near them when Dorothy was bathing. Indeed, the old witch never touched water, nor ever let water touch her in any way. But the wicked creature was very cunning, and she finally thought of a trick would give her what she wanted. She placed the bath's iron in the middle of the kitchen floor, and then by magic arts made the iron visible to the naked eye, so that when Dorothy walked across the room, she stumbled over the bar, not being able to see it, fell at full length. She was not hurt much, but in her fall, one of the silver shoes came off, and before she could reach it, witch had snatched it away, put it on her own skinny foot, with which was greatly pleased the success of the trick. But as long as she had one of the shoes, she owned half the power of the charm, though she could not use it against her, even if she had known how to do so. The little girl, seeing that she had lost one of the pretty shoes, grew angry, and said to the witch, "Give me back my shoe." "I will not," retorted the witch, "but it is now my shoe, not yours." "You're a wicked creature," cried Dorothy. "You have no right to take my shoe from me." "I shall keep it just the same," said the witch, laughing at her. "And some day I'll get the other one from you too." This made Dorothy so very angry, she picked up the bucket of water and stood near it and dashed it over the witch, wetting her from head to foot. Instantly the wicked woman gave a loud cry of fear. Then, as Dorothy looked at her in wonder, the witch began to shrink and fall away. "See what you've done," she cried, screamed. "In a minute I shall melt away." "I'm very sorry indeed," said Dorothy, but truly frightened to see the witch actually melt away like brown sugar, for she very airy eyes. "Didn't you know water would be the end of me?" asked the witch in a wailing, despairing voice. "Of course not," answered Dorothy. "How should I?" "Well, in a few minutes I shall be melted, and you'll have the castle to yourself. I've been wicked all my life, eh? I never thought a little girl like you would ever be able to melt me. End my wicked deeds, look out. Here I go." These words, the witch fell in a brown, he melted a shapeless mass. Between began to spread over the clean boards of the kitchen floor. Seeing she had really melted away to nothing, Dorothy drew another bucket of water and threw it over the mess. He then swept it all under out in the door, and picking up the silver shoe, which was all that was left of the old woman, he cleaned and dried it with cloth, put it on a rod again. Then, being last free to do as he chose, he ran out, caught her to tell the line, the wicked witch of the west had come to an end. They were no longer prisoners in a strange land.